Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All righty, hour number two. We're back inside the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Busy Wednesday. How are you? Come on in. Come on in. You like it. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Eddie George is awesome. I know you were talking to him after the segment. Our producer, Big Mike, was rapping with him as well. He said he enjoys the debate. He's probably saying, oh, this loudmouth, I got to do. Let me just talk to Tiki. But I stand by what I said. And I'll tell you, tomorrow night, maybe I've got to revise my opinion of the Tennessee Titans. But I did back it up, and I was really turned off by Malarkey going for the onside. And at some point, I'm going to have to forget about that.
Yeah.
But the reason I reference it, and Amy Trask is with me on this. Amy references it a few times on Tops as well, is that I thought it sent like an inferiority complex, like message of inferiority.
Yeah, but when you
the
win.
The first play of the game.
True, but when you win, what, they won four in a row now?
But they lost that game.
I know, they lost that
to
game.
To the Raiders, they lost that game.
I agree,
you know,
it was a bad
come
loss.
On, we're at home.
Especially because the Raiders aren't as good as we thought they were going to be this season. So,
but
yeah,
just the whole concept of an onside kick, it's the element of surprise. Everybody's uber aware the first play of the year.
Yeah, maybe you
what do you think you're going to do? Catch them napping the first play?
Well, maybe you do that on the road at the first play of the year. I don't think you need
or
to do it at
home. Or if you're 13-point dogs and you think you have no chance to win and you got to steal one.
Yeah, true.
I mean, but that aside.
The Raiders on the road, that might have been.
I still would disagree with it.
It would have been more forgivable. Again, and at the end of the day, the players don't give a crap, right?
You don't think they feel that?
No, they've forgotten about this. Now,
I don't mean now, but I mean then.
Maybe, but I mean, they were probably excited about it at the time. And if it would have worked, it would have.
Until three plays later when the Raiders punched a touchdown down their throat. Yeah. They're like, why are we losing 7-0 a minute into this game?
Yeah.
I mean, then I don't think they like it.
But it's not lingering
no,
now.
No, I know it's not.
Players don't care now. And really nobody does, especially after the win streak. And when you look at the Titans, like Corey Davis, who we thought was going to be such an impact player as a rookie, he's barely played this year because of his hamstring, which is weird, man. I think he did that even before camp really started.
He was banged up early.
All through the month of camp and then a month of the season, and now he's finally just starting to get back out there. Let's also not forget that their most reliable wide receiver, Delanie Walker, has been banged up for the last few weeks.
Tight end.
Tight end. He's finally coming back.
Yep.
DeMarco Murray, he's been banged up. And they've still been on this. Heck, the quarterback, Marcus Mariota, had a hamstring injury. And they've still been on a four-game win streak over the last month or so. So, I mean, this team is playing good football. At least it's not impressive.
No, it's not.
Right? They're not.
It's not impressive.
They don't look
it's
like
not.
The team that's supposed to win.
No.
But they're winning. And there's something to that, especially given all the injuries.
You know, listen, Teague, it's hard to win on Sunday. You lived it. I've covered this for 20. I get it. It's not easy. But, you know, at some point, those wins where you just kind of skate by against an inferior team, now there's a little measuring stick. And I think tomorrow's a great one. You know, and listen, I'm going to move on past the Raiders, week one, the onsides. But even so, to me, this is a reflection of Mike Malarkey. I'm sorry. When you lose, and sometimes it happens. Sometimes you get your brains beat in, and you're just on the wrong. Like, the Bills got waxed by the Saints. Now, is that, and from the opening kick, things just went awry. Is that reflective of the fact that the Bills aren't very good? Mm-hmm. And we'll get to them, obviously, with McDermott's decision to change quarterbacks. Or the Saints, everything was rolling, or a combination of the two. Well, probably that the Saints are just simply better.
Yeah.
But that Texans game, they get 57 points hung on them. All right, you want to put an anomaly, just a bad day.
That was bizarre.
Okay, but the next week, then they go to Miami.
Yeah.
Miami's shown nothing this year. They score 10 points.
Yeah, let's not forget
they lose.
Marcus Mariota was not under center that weekend. He got hurt, obviously, in the Houston game. Early in that game against Houston, he pulled his hamstring. He scored two touchdowns, I think two on the ground. Marcus Mariota did the last one. He dove for the pylon. He probably pulled his hamstring a little bit. He didn't play against Miami. Matt Cassel was the starting quarterback in that game. We know who Matt Castle is.
Scored 10 points.
Agreed.
Run the ball.
Agreed. And I don't know if DeMarco Murray even played in that game either.
They got Derrick Henry. He's a beast.
There's just been some attrition.
A lot of excuses for a team that doesn't play that well.
It's injuries, man. And if you battle injuries and lose two games in the early part of your season and then rip off four in a row, although not impressive.
The Patriots lost Edelman. They got rid of Blunt.
With all due respect,
everybody's banged up at this point.
With all due respect, I am not comparing the Tennessee Titans and Coach Mularkey to Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
So we're going to compare them to the Steelers?
That's fair enough. That's not even the same.
You want to compare them to the Chiefs? I'm just trying to see where they reside.
Lost three of their last four.
Who would you pick to win tomorrow night? Chiefs or the Titans? Pick the Chiefs.
I don't know. I mean, the Chiefs haven't run the ball in 3 weeks, BT. And what made them
amazing.
And
they haven't stopped the run.
They haven't stopped the run, and they haven't run the ball in 3 weeks. Right. And what made them amazing week one is that Kareem Hunt was going for 200 all-purpose yards and three touchdowns a weekend. And so, hey. I mean, I don't know where the Chiefs are. The Chiefs are the most confounding team in the NFL to me right
They're
now.
They're right there.
Because not even a month ago, to me, they were the best team in football, right? And it wasn't even a debate about it. It was like, who's the best team in football? It's the Chiefs. Right, Alex Smith is playing great football. He's not turning the ball over because he never does. He's throwing the ball down the field this year. They got a runner that reminds you of Jamaal Charles in his heyday. And now they can't win a football game or can't play well consistently for 60 minutes and win a football game. Who would win this game right now, the Tennessee Titans or the Kansas City? I have no idea.
Well,
to be honest with you.
Fair. I'll tell you this. We'll get to the Bills here in a sec. You know, and I know they've won four straight. I know they're 6-3. They're atop the AFC South. The Tennessee Titans in mid-November have a negative point differential.
Yeah, I know.
The Jaguars are plus 91 or 92. Mm-hmm. The Titans are minus 8.
Yeah.
That tells me they're getting a little lucky, and at some point that expires.
Teams with negative point differentials aren't supposed to win football games. Somehow, they've won four in a row.
They have.
Yeah.
The Bills have lost two in a row, and they're getting ugly. What do you think of McDermott's decision? We'll play the cut from Coach McDermott. What was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was why? Because they're still in it. We had a conversation a couple of days ago about how it feels like the AFC is weak. It is. I mean, the sixth ranked team is a team that's lost two games in a row and given up 500 yards rushing in those two games, and that's the Buffalo Bills. But they're still in it,
mm-hmm.
right? They're nowhere near. Let's cast in our chips. Let's start preparing for next year's draft.
If they keep playing this way, they are.
But
hence the move.
Maybe that's what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was my first thought was mm-hmm. all right. You're still in it, but you're flipping to a rookie. Who nobody has any expectation that's going to be any good. Coach McDermott thinks that he's ready, or he just thinks that they need a change because Tyrod Taylor hasn't been playing good. But, I mean, unless this locker room, and I don't know this locker room because I'm not in this locker room, unless this locker room has behind the scenes been intimating that this needs to happen, this could create some strife with this Buffalo Bills team that has, to this point,
mm-hmm.
been pretty controlled under a new head coach, a new regime, a new culture.
Yep.
If Nate Peterman goes in here, what's his name? Peterman, right? What's his last name? I can't remember the kid's last name.
Who's taking over
yeah.
for him?
Peterman. Yeah. If he goes in and plays terrible,
mm-hmm.
then this locker room could revolt because I think they like Tyrod Taylor, even
yeah.
though they don't like how he's playing.
Yeah, I'm okay rolling the dice on, you know, bruising a few egos after I just watch what I watch again at home against the Saints.
I would agree.
I'm not too worried about what that locker room is thinking after I just got my ass handed to me. I mean, from the opening kickoff, and I had no chance to win this game.
I don't know. It just feels flip-flop, right? After the game and on Monday, yeah, Tyrod Taylor's our quarterback. And then I slept on it, and now it's Peterman.
Or I watched the tape, and I'm happy you bring that up because let's play this. This was, as Tiki referenced, this was after the game. Coach McDermott pretty committed, pretty definitive still, that Tyrod Taylor's his guy. Okay, that was on Sunday. Again, he's the head coach. He's got the right to change his mind. That was on Sunday earlier today on why he's making the change. Here's McDermott. I'll tell you what, Teague, it takes a broad set of shoulders to reverse the recent roughly 20-year history of a team that's done nothing since 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I love what he's doing. I think it shows direction. It shows gumption. And I think the Bills have themselves a head coach who's going to be around for a long time. I like this kid, Peterman. Do you remember last year how we played against Clemson?
I do. And
he
remember John
beat
and I
Deshaun Watson.
I agreed. I remember John Gruden raving about this kid, saying he might be the best of the rookie class coming in. Because he's a pro style quarterback who will be game ready from day one. Those are John Gruden's quotes on Peterman, but I mean, I still got to see it. I mean, I just don't know.
Maybe he's seen it in practice.
Maybe. I mean, obviously he's seen it in practice.
Otherwise,
he wouldn't be making this decision. And again, I mentioned this earlier. There is an economic consequence here. Every quarterback, at least except for the higher tier superstars like the Andrew Lux or the
Drew Brees making 30 mil, whatever he's making.
Yeah,
sure.
These guys who are making ridiculous amounts of money. Most of them, like Andy Dalton, like Tyrod Taylor, are get to a year like Ryan Tannehill down in Miami. They get to a year where it becomes a make or break cap number year. So if you cut them this year, the cap number is if you keep them this year, the cap number is X. If you cut them this year, that cap number is Y. Y significantly lower than X.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Tyrod Taylor is right now. He was in a cap make or break year. If they keep him through March, and I said this earlier on the program.
But what does that mean about changing him today? Why does that impact?
They have to know.
But if they liked him, they worry about the money in March. In March, you're still trying to win playoffs. If they thought he was the guy, they wouldn't bench him for $5 million.
Well, they don't know if he's the guy.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And so they're trying to find out.
No, by not knowing that he's the guy, they know that he's not the guy.
I completely agree.
They know he's not the guy.
But Sean McDermott has said, I'm not opposed to Tyrod Taylor coming back and being our starter if Peterman doesn't have it. Right? So he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Which means he's not committed to Peterman. He's not committed to Tyrod Taylor.
Nor should he be.
But there's an economic factor that's here that you can't ignore, right? You have to know if you can move on from Tyrod Taylor. And that's why you play
But do
Peterman.
You think he's
it's
wrapped
interesting
up
because,
in that?
Because,
as a head coach,
yeah, of course,
you think he cares about the economics?
He's the CEO of the team. He has to. You know what I mean? He has to. And if he's not, then he's not doing his job
I'm sure he's aware of the economics. I don't know if that's the motivation, Teak. I got to be honest with you. He's trying to win games. And I would think that the Bengals have given him the latitude to go with the guy that he thinks will put them in the best position to win games.
Yes.
Right now.
And are you positive that that's Nate Peterman?
No, but I'm pretty sure it's not Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor is one game.
Tyrod
for the,
Taylor
for
can't throw the ball downfield.
He can't.
Everything's a dink and a dunk.
He just hasn't.
Oh, man.
BT, when Sammy Tyrod Watkins was Taylor. Here, we raved at how great of a deep ball that he had. And again, I'm not defending Tyrod Taylor because I wouldn't want him as my quarterback for the future. But I'm just, they committed to him and they signed him to a deal. And from a business perspective, I can't look at this and say this has nothing to do with the fact that if he's on the roster in March, that he makes $18 million against the cap. If he's not on the roster in March, it's $3 million against the cap. So you know you're rebuilding, right? And this team clearly is in quasi-rebuild.
But I'm not contesting
because
that now, that's not what I'm challenging.
They got rid of Robert Woods.
Yep.
They got rid of Sammy Watkins. They got rid of Marcell Dareus. There was talk about getting rid of Shady McCoy, right? They're resetting while still trying to win, which is an odd place to be in. And this doesn't work, by the way. When teams try to do this, it doesn't work. You can't jettison veteran parts and then rebuild and then hope to win at the same time. So they're in an odd place, the Buffalo Bills. And it sounds easy to sit here and say, yeah, they just want to win a game, right? They just want to find a way to win a game. It's so much more complex than that.
And why?
Because changing your quarterback doesn't just automatically win you a game. Tell me when that's worked. Seriously, tell me when it's worked.
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily wins you a game, but maybe it can at least put you in a better position to have a chance to win a game.
I understand that.
I mean, that's what coaching's all about,
BT,
putting the best people in a position.
I agree.
Almost irregardless of the economics. That's for ownership of the GM to worry
about. I know,
about.
But for me to sit here and look at this and say, this is all about Tyrod Taylor not being able to win a game, I'd be lying to myself. Because I know that's not the case.
Well, and by the way, I mean, the question that you just asked me, I could give you 10 examples.
Who?
Deshaun Watson?
Deshaun Watson should have started at the beginning of the season.
Okay.
He didn't play for a half. That was Bill O'Brien trying to be cute. Tom Brady, by necessity, had to come in and play.
Yeah, when Mo Lewis was hurt.
And he wasn't fantastic.
But he still protected the football, and they won games.
They had a fantastic defense.
No, I understand that.
Don't tell me after year one you knew Tom Brady was going to be the Hall of Fame.
Jeff Hostetler, when Phil Simms went down?
That was a different ball game.
But it's still the sport. But you just asked me a question.
But it was a different ball game in
1986. So, all right, ask me the question again. The way you, the way, exactly the way you just
tell Tell me when a football team has in the middle of the season, not by injury, not by because you started in a
poor performance, bent somebody,
and 2 quarters in, you got a quarterback sacked 6 times because he can't get out of the way of a defender's, and the Jacksonville Jaguars end up destroying you. Tell me when a team midway through a season has said, yeah, we made the wrong decision with our starting quarterback. You know, instead of Blaine Gabbert, we're going to go with Colin Kaepernick. And tell me when it's worked.
Well, listen, I'll answer it this way. The teams that do it are generally teams that lose a lot in a row.
I understand
so that's,
that.
Maybe that's why I'm more okay with it that it's the Bills, because they've identified, listen, they've seen Tyrod Taylor play enough. Before McDermott took the job, you know that he watched every snap that he took to assess what he's inheriting.
Mm-hmm.
So he already had a database of good and bad.
Of course.
Now we let it play out for the first 10 weeks. There's been some good. He certainly protects the football. He's a good athlete, no doubt. He's got a pretty good IQ. But there's limits there. When they're down, they just can't score points in bushels. So then you watch Peterman in practice. You watch the tape against Clemson when he threw 3 touchdowns and he beat Clemson's defense. And he outperformed Deshaun Watson. And you say, you know what? We haven't played well for the past better part of a month. Let's mix it up. I just don't think it's economically fueled.
And
I think if it was December, it might be. And they were, 4-10 or whatever. I mean, whatever it might be. Like, the Jets will make a decision probably in the next 3 weeks. Sit down, McCown. Make sure you have nothing in Petty and Hackenberg, and then you draft somebody. That's a decision that with different motivation. I really think that he thinks that Peterman's better. You don't think that that's the case? Why else would he do it?
I don't know why he did it. And I think it has something to do with the economic. Yeah, maybe. But how about you get your defense in order? Seriously, you're giving up 500 yards rushing in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
right. You can't. You're a sieve on defense.
But is there a backup defensive tackle that can? That's what
you traded your defensive tackle, your best one, and now you have depth problems. So you get gas in the fourth quarter because you don't have enough depth, and you got guys who were in practice squad or probably didn't deserve to be on the roster, lining up for depth purposes, and you get run through.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, let's put it all on Tyrod Taylor. It's all Tyrod's fault now.
You know how it is, man.
I know.
The quarterback gets the big contract, and he gets all the hate when it doesn't go right.
And you said it. You hit my point exactly. He got a big contract. He does not deserve it. They need to find out if they can play somebody else. That's why this is happening right now.
All right. Well, I don't think the Bills, based on that discussion, will be on our list of top 10 NFL teams. I don't think, but we'll do that coming up next. We'll rank them. It'll be interesting. We haven't done this yet this season. It's the middle of November. Look at the Tiki's list. We got a few disagreements here. The pecking order's a little varied. So it'll be pretty awesome. Looking forward to this. That'll come up next right here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, Tiki and Tierney back. Good debate. Good debate about the Bills quarterback situation. By the way, if you guys want to chime in, get us on Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. Phones open as always. Phones are always open. 1-855-212-4227. On a busy Wednesday, Ian Eagle's going to join us coming up next. You know what? Since we want to make sure we have ample time to do it, we'll push back our rank'em. We'll push that back to next hour. Also, John Gruden really leaving the door very open to, maybe Tennessee. We had the malarkey discussion, either Tennessee Volunteers or maybe the Tennessee Titans if it doesn't work out for malarkey. But let's get to UCLA for a little bit here. Steve Alford really hasn't been very public about what the plans are.
No.
For the three young student athletes who were, I would say caught stealing, but is there actual documentation of them stealing it?
I don't know. I think there was suspicion of, just from what you've read, obviously I haven't seen anything. I'm sure if there were CC video, it's never going to come to us. On the state side.
I just say that because I'm not so sure we should trust the Chinese government and take their word for everything.
Yeah, I think the players admitted it, and so that was part of, that was part of their, apology this afternoon. But yeah, originally when it was alleged, you don't know.
They could say anything.
You're right.
Okay, so let's hear first up, and we will hear from LeAngelo in a bit. Steve Alford, overview, what this means for those involved. And obviously, the ball name is the one that most people react to. Here's Steve Alford.
These three young men will remain suspended indefinitely from our program as we work through the review process with the university's Office of Student Conduct. They will not travel with the team, nor will they suit up for home games. At some point, they may be permitted to join team workouts, practices, and meetings, but that timeline has yet to be determined.
Okay. let's go back and forth quickly on this. You and I both played Division I sports, and I got into trouble. You didn't. You played a much more recognizable sport in terms of revenue. You played football. I played baseball. What do you think? I mean, should they even have a uniform at this point?
No, they should have kicked them off the team. They really should have.
I'm with you.
And I think a lot of it could have been because they want to get LaMelo down the line, you know, whenever he comes available, because he is a higher starred recruit than LiAngelo is right now. But, you know, this is like you go in on an international trip. It's one thing if you're goofing off in your backyard or in your home state and you do something stupid with your friends. When you're on an international, ambassador type trip,
stage,
to represent your university in a foreign country, much less a communist foreign country, and you're going to do something as stupid as try to steal sunglasses from a Louis Vuitton store, then you don't get it, right? And I know you're young and you're 19 and you made a stupid mistake, but I don't buy that anymore for kids. Kids are grown up, especially in the digital world that we live in these days. It's not like, oh, I never knew you'd get in trouble for taking. You know, shut up, right? They made a bad mistake in a major stage, and UCLA will hear about this as long as they're around. As soon as LiAngelo comes back on the basketball court, this is what you're going to be talking about, or at least this is what you're going to be thinking about.
It's always been my policy as an adult to, you know, be open and give kids a fair amount of space to make mistakes and certainly to recover from those mistakes. You know, the last thing I want to see is a young student athlete, male or female, you know, had their life irreparably damaged or changed or altered for a stupid juvenile. Even one that's the criminal element for sure. You can't steal. We get that. They didn't put a gun in somebody's temple. They didn't go up and kill somebody because they were drunk. They didn't get caught with heroin. They did something incredibly dumb. But I don't want to do anything that would preclude them from continuing their athletic and their academic endeavors.
Just do it someplace else.
Bingo. However, you cannot play at UCLA, nor can you. You could be a student here, actually, but now you're going to have to pay for it. So I really believe, and I really think that I'm pretty sensible about this. I don't want to hurt kids' future because I made mistakes.
I agree.
Maybe that's why I'm so sensitive to it. But they don't deserve to wear those colors. They cannot represent UCLA. If I'm the president, the provost, whomever, you got to go. You got to go, and you can't play for this basketball team, and you no longer have a scholarship that has been revoked. If you want to go to a mid-major, if another big school thinks you're good enough to play there, if you want to go to Division II to play right away second semester with a transfer without being penalized with a sit-out rule, go for it. Yep. Continue your path as a young student-athlete, but you can't play at UCLA.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're still on the team.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why they still have a path to get back on the team.
Agreed.
As Steve Alford just said.
Why it's indefinite and not permanent. Now, they spoke about this, obviously, all three of the young men, but LiAngelo is the one who we caught, obviously, and is going to get most of the airplay on this. This is LiAngelo's apology.
I'd like to start off by saying sorry for stealing from the stores in China. I didn't exercise my best judgment, and I was wrong for that. I apologize to my family, my coaches, my teammates, and UCLA for letting so many people down. I also apologize to the people of China for causing them so much trouble. I'm a young man, however, it's not an excuse for making a really stupid decision. I don't feel sorry for myself, and I've learned my lesson from this big mistake, and I'm 110% sure that I'll not make a bad decision like this one again.
Okay. I mean, it seems pretty sincere. Mm-hmm. I'm sure somebody helped him craft that, as he should have direction on this kind of a stage. But it seemed like he dotted all of his I's. He included everything that he had to include for me. It satisfies. I'm not out for blood with young student-athletes, young kids. I'm not. I know you're not. I can only think, you know, my little guy's going to be 3 in a couple of months. I can only fast forward to when he's 17 or 18, if he plays sports at that level, if he wants to, if he's good enough, whatever. And this came across my desk as a dad. Of course, I'd be incredibly disappointed, and I would, you know, with swift, reaction, I would condemn it for sure. I wouldn't get the back of my hand at that point on his behind. He'd be a little bit too old for that. But I would expect as a dad that, whether it's at UCLA, at Marist where I went, Virginia where you went, that he would be kicked off the team. And I would have to accept that.
Yeah.
And so would my son.
I mean, it's basically an international incident.
Yeah, it is.
The president had to get involved.
And then, yeah, listen. And great job getting involved, but don't tweet out that you want thanks.
Yeah, I agreed.
It's just so petty. You know, we do have the cut. Let's play this cut real quick. Go ahead, guys.
I'm grateful for this UCLA team that stood strong beside us and made it possible for me to be sitting here in front of you all today. I respect and admire all the hard work that they put in to get us back to the United States. I would also like to thank President Trump and the United States government for the help that they provided as well.
And listen, there's a lot of validity. I mean, all the Trump detractors can minimize that. There's a lot of validity to Trump getting involved and you know, yielding some power, some influence, whatever, to facilitate this. You look so desperate and you look so petty by tweeting what he did. It's behind us there. President Trump, do you think three UCLA basketball players will say thank you, President Trump? They were headed for jail to jail for 10 years, or they were headed for 10 years in jail. Well, it was between 3 and 10 years.
Yeah, which was actually whatever. Never the case, because they weren't actually charged with that deep of a penalty.
Just have the self-confidence that people will recognize that you intervened and
that
it got
say
done.
Thank you anyways.
Yes, and that they will say thank you. All right, that's where we stand. Teague and I are in unison. They should not play for UCLA moving forward. Moving forward with Chad with Ian Eagle. By the way, if you wanted to chime in on that, if you wanted to weigh in, tweets, would love to hear what you think. I mean, is that too harsh? You heard our reasoning for them being kicked off the team eventually, even though it looks like they have a road to get back. Tweet us at Teague and Tierney. Jay Berman's update coming at you right now. Here's Jay. All right, we're back here. Teague and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. Man, it's, I tell you, the week goes fast, doesn't it? I mean, every week goes fast.
Of the week, man. Getting ready for Thursday night football.
You know, it comes quick.
It does.
When it's time to chat with Ian, you know that the next week is upon us, basically, and week 11 is tomorrow night. Should be fun. We had Eddie George before. By the way, Titan fans, you might want to get with the interview. Just go to TikiandTierney.com. Eddie and I had a nice, how do we just, nice running, little debate, little running dialogue on the merits of malarkey. You know, I don't think he's that good. I also think, to be fair, I also think Eddie's a Tennessee legend. He's around the neighborhood. Right. Probably feels compelled to defend them. Doesn't want to go off the reservation.
They're also 6-3 and 1-4 in a row.
Yeah, so. I hear you, but I'd be surprised. And maybe I'm wrong. I'd be surprised if Eddie truly thinks Mike Mularkey's an above-average coach. Maybe he does. I don't know. Thursday Night Football Preview brought to you by the new 2018 Ford F-150, the official truck of the NFL. It doesn't just raise the bar. It is the bar, and he's here to preview the game tomorrow night, which he's going to call. That's the Steelers and the Titans, and a multitude of other things. He was doing the Rams game this past weekend, so he got to call the 94-yard touchdown. Hope it was a good one. And also, he's got the Giants and the Chiefs coming up this Sunday. The Giants are awful. The Chiefs need to get a win, and that's Ian Eagle. What's up there, Ian? How are you, Birdman?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, man. By the way, how many Bills games have you done this year? One or two.
I have done one Bills game. That was the Thursday night game against the Jets, which
was the
beginning of what has now been a downfall. For this to change as rapidly as it has, at the time I did the game with Boomer Esiason, we were singing the praises of Tyrod Taylor, the way he's run the offense, the way he's been efficient, the fact that it has been a nice fit in Buffalo, and then here we are just a few weeks later, and major changes are happening.
Yeah.
And a transformation.
True, and the impetus probably a little, maybe even a little less in the Jets game, was the 47-10 wax job that the Saints laid on them. That's the kind of game that's just so dispiriting for a fan base that, boy, they deserve better. Listen, Tyrod Taylor's obviously a functional quarterback, but, I mean, what do you know about Peterman, or are you stunned that McDermott has changed this midseason when they still have a chance to do something special here? What's your thoughts?
No, not stunned, only because I don't think this current regime was married to anybody from the previous regime. They basically made it clear that they were starting from fresh, and if anything, it was more of a surprise that Tyrod Taylor had maintained his job. But with that said, I felt that he was playing at a high enough level to keep the gig. To have this happen only a few weeks later, that part of it is surprising. But I can't say I'm shocked that Sean McDermott's willing to make changes, because you look at the roster, they've turned that roster over. It's a bunch of new faces, and the Darius trade further validates and cements the fact that they're moving on. They're not standing pat. If something's not working, they'll do something about it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard, though, Ian, to rebuild while you're still sitting above 500 and are currently sixth in the in the AFC and currently in the postseason. I mean, it's got to be an odd emotional feeling in that locker room if you really think about it.
Yeah, and I think there are people, including myself, that were really shocked that they were a factor, that mm-hmm. they were competitive, that they were above 500 and in position to maybe be a legitimate playoff team. So I wonder within the confines of their facility if that took them by surprise as well and threw off their original game plan, and now they might be going back to their philosophy, which is, hey, we got to figure out who's going to be a part of this as we move forward. They made serious changes. Culturally, they made changes. Sean McDermott from Rex Ryan is about a 180 from what you're looking for from your team. Ryan was loosey-goosey, and Sean is not. He's more buttoned up. He's going to have things a certain way. And I think maybe this is a sign of, hey, we're going to find out if we've got something in Peterman or if we've got to address this during the offseason.
Yeah, in the draft. Good stuff. Ian Eagle with us here, Tiki and Tierney. Weekly spot, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Tennessee and Pittsburgh tomorrow. He's going to be on the call.
Yeah, you know, this Thursday night game, Ian, with the Steelers and the Titans, obviously it's about the players, and I guess Tennessee should be excited because Delanie Walker, who was all everything tight end last year, is finally going to come back. It feels like health is coming back on their side. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this will be about the coaching, though. And we know where Mike Tomlin is. He'll be there forever, at least until he decides not to, because that's just how the Steelers do this. But Malarkey on the other side, there's some questions about whether or not, and a lot of it from BT, whether or not he's the guy for the future of this Tennessee team. What is the prevailing thought about him as a coach and, more importantly, his development of Marcus Mariota and where this offense is currently headed?
Yeah, it's a great question because I don't think he fits into the high-profile nature of some of the coaches around the NFL. Certainly the teams that are considered playoff-worthy normally have a coach that either had some sizzle, was a hotshot coordinator that got hired, or has been there for a while and established credibility. Malarkey's previous stops, one of them being Buffalo, Jacksonville mm-hmm. being the other, were not well thought of because they eventually would lead to a lot of losses. And I think he was a bit of a surprise to get the job when they made the move and he was an interim, and then a bit of a surprise when he kept the job. But they felt that things were going in the right direction with Mariota. The numbers are not there this year. Yes, you pointed it out. They have a winning record. They have won four straight. The four-game winning streak has come against Cleveland and Indy and Baltimore and Cincinnati, a combined 10-27 record. So mm-hmm. I don't ever fault a team for beating who's on your schedule. That's your schedule. Go out, win the games. But you're going to get these litmus test games along the way, and I think that's why these narratives pop up with Malarkey. This is a big game for Tennessee, a huge game in my mind to show the rest of the league where they stand. Are they a team that can truly be a player in this, or are they going to be teetering and it may come down to that final week against Jacksonville? With Malarkey, I would tend to agree that if this team doesn't make the playoffs, if they don't show legitimate progress, then his name's going to pop up because he just doesn't have quite the sizzle of the other coaches that normally maintain the job long-term in this league.
Yeah, we're on the same page. You know, with the Steelers here, Ian, and I was watching a decent chunk, I'm not really sure why, of the Colts game, and it was boring. I mean, here the Colts, they jump out, they score quick 10 points, they're up 10-3. I'm saying, all right, Pittsburgh's going to step on them the final 30 minutes or whatever and just, you know, kind of run them out of the stadium. And 2 minutes into the third quarter, bang, 61-yard touchdown, and you look up at 17-3. Colts are beating the Steelers. I know that the Steelers had great moxie in coming back and winning that game, and I know that it's dangerous to grade wins because in this league, it's not easy to get them. But yep. There's just something a little bit off with Pittsburgh, too. What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think they were supposed to be dynamic on offense, and that's our general feeling of this transition period for the Steelers. They were known more as a defensive team when Mike Tomlin took over, and then timely offense when necessary. But with Todd Haley and Roethlisberger, the numbers were very prodigious in recent years. So the assumption was that, all right, this team can go out and score with anybody. That's not how they're winning games. They're one of five teams in the NFL this year that has not scored 30 points in a game. And let me give you the other teams.
Go ahead.
Because this is not a list that you would want to be associated
with. Go ahead.
It's Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
It's the Giants.
Oof.
It's Chicago.
Yikes.
And it's the Chargers. So Pittsburgh
Chargers
is
a little surprising,
group.
Actually. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
A little surprising, Chargers.
We just assume that the Steelers would be humming on offense. And their yard totals are still good. They're just not scoring a lot. And Roethlisberger, he himself said somewhere along the way that he's been a bit off. And people took that as well, maybe this is it. Maybe Ben finally has decided that he wants to wrap up his career at some point. I don't want to go that far. I think it goes up and down with him. This week in particular, and you just mentioned it, BT,
yep.
A win is a win in this league. Mm-hmm. And they were questioned in Pittsburgh by the media locally and by fans that it was not the best of wins. And what's wrong? And what's the problem? And Roethlisberger came out and basically said, like, hey, a win's a win. Just accept it for what it is, and we're going to figure out what we need to figure out within our structure.
Although I would like to tell Big Ben, when it's a 10-point spread and you win by 3, that doesn't help me. But yeah, I mean, just for the record, I mean, it might be a win for him. It ain't a win for me.
Played a role. That may have played a role. They've won 4 straight games, so they're doing what they're supposed to do. They just might not be doing it the way that we thought they were going to do it. Now, meanwhile, defensively, they're number 2 in the NFL in team defense. They're number 2 in scoring defense. And while Dick LeBeau got an incredible amount of credit, and rightfully so, during his years with the Steelers running that defense, Keith Butler, who got a lot of criticism the last couple of years, deserves now to get some of those plaudits, because that unit is playing at a high level. They are getting to the quarterback. They have 29 sacks this season, although they don't have one particular guy that strikes the fear in you as a pass rusher. They're doing it as a team. And now they got to deal with an injury. Joe Hayden broke his leg, so Cody Sensabaugh, who's bounced around a bit, is going to step in that spot.
Hey, Ian, we have about a minute and a half here, but you have the Giants hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs have lost 3 of their last 4, Pittsburgh, Oakland, and Dallas. They lost, so they beat Denver a couple weeks ago. But they're playing the Giants. This kind of needs to be their get-right game. What have you been able to see and identify is the issue with their run game? Because that was the catalyst for the points and the consistency early on. But Hunt's been bottled up the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, you could speak on this a lot better than I can, the rookie wall. I'm sensing maybe he's hit that. I know it's fictitious in many circles, but I do think for some guys, considering the wear and tear that he was putting on his body through the first 5-6 weeks of the year, he was a workhorse for them. Not just in the run game, but in the pass game as well. And I wonder if maybe it's caught up to him a bit. That's been the major difference. Defensively, there have been some issues and a couple of leaks. They were better early in the season through the first 5 weeks. But the run game, it's blatant. The numbers don't lie on that front. They're just not getting the same kind of push, and they're not getting the same pop from Kareem Hunt. Alex Smith is still not making mistakes, and his numbers are across the board impressive. They have 4 turnovers as a team. 4.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is wow.
That's the fewest in the NFL. That's through
amazing.
9 games. Those are unheard of numbers.
That really is amazing. Hunt, .148 week 1, 81 in week 2, 172, 101, and then 107. The last 4 weeks, 21, 87, 46, 37. And they don't stop the run either, so they got to kind of bottle that up. All right, we got to bounce. 10 seconds here. You had a 94-yard touchdown call. Jared Goff, you've been doing this for a long time. Is that the longest in your career in the NFL? It's got to be, right?
Ooh, wow, that's a great question. I may have had a 96-yarder somewhere in there. I mean, this is 20 years, so I would have to go through the files. I think I may have had a 96-yarder. Something seems to resonate with me with that number.
Okay. A little random. I mean, you're not saying 95. You're not saying 97. So, I mean, you're jumping on 96.
Obviously. Something is sticking in my head, but you know, I there's so many names and numbers and teams and years. It's all just melding together
into one big paycheck.
I hear you.
I hear you. Ian, great work, buddy. Have a good time tomorrow night, and obviously do your thing against with the Chiefs and the Giants on Sunday.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, pal. We'll be watching and listening tomorrow. There you go. Thursday Night Football Preview brought to you by the new 2018 Ford F-150, the official truck of the NFL. Doesn't just raise the bar. It is the bar. We got to rank them. We'll certainly do that coming up. Looks like Gruden's going to leave the door open to return. Are we going to buy it this time, or is it more, you know, nonsense? We've heard that in the past.
Tennessee or maybe Tampa Bay he could go back to.
We also got to talk about the college football playoff. D-Cell, you feeling comfortable?
Get the U up.
Feeling happy.
Get the U up. Get the U up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.